My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to this week's Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast. I'm Barry Murphy, news correspondent here on the team. On this week's episode, we're going to discuss how a move from the European Commission might see many Irish farmers need environmental permits to farm. We'll also talk department finances and look at where the 40 million left unspent in the BEAM scheme ever went to. Beef editor Adam Woods goes through our beef breeding focus, available in this week's paper, and updates us on how farmers might be incentivized to slaughter cattle earlier to reduce emissions. We hear that TB compensation pay farmers is up and that the trade for cull yaws is absolutely flying. Rachel Donovan brings us an update from a meeting between the Women in Agriculture stakeholder group and Minister Martin Hayden. And finally, the livestock team's Niamh Gunn talks to the winners of the 2022 Certified Irish Angus Schools competition. Lots to get through from this week's paper, folks, so let's kick into it now. First up, we're going to speak to our acting news editor, Amy Ford. Amy, I could see some farmers asking what's next after reading your story on page one that farmers may need it to keep a license to run cattle. Some radical changes coming from the European Commission. If these environmental permits become reality, what are farmers to make of it all?
Yeah, Barry, this is interesting is one word for this new proposal. It's a proposal under the Industrial Emissions Directive from the European Commission, and it sets out basically that some livestock farms, including pig and poultry units, are going to be included in the Industrial Emissions Directive. And how does that look on paper? Basically, any farm that has over 150 livestock units is going to be covered by this proposal as it currently stands, and that'll see those farms are over that amount with more than that amount of stock is basically going to need to hold an environmental permit. So what does that look like basically in practice? So 150 livestock units, that is a dairy cow or a suckler cow at the minute. That is one livestock unit. So straight maths there, you know, 150 cows or more, that could see those farmers having to hold permits. But you also have, if you have, you know, 130 dairy cows, but you also have replacements and calves and everything else, that all adds up. Or if you had 80 suckler cows and 80 followers, you know, a couple of cull cows and a few other animals around as well, and then that brings you over 150 livestock units basically is the proposal. On pig and poultry farms, that's pig farms with over 300 sows or almost poultry farms at 11,000 layers or more, they could also need such a permit under this proposal. And we already know that some of those farms are already subject to EPA licenses. So background to this, last week a leaked draft of this proposal, Barry, showed that it'd be 100 livestock units that farms would come in under this proposal, but that's actually been increased to the official proposal that's out on the table to 150, as we said there. Operating rules for livestock farms, they're going to take into consideration not only the nature, type, size and density, but also the complexity of these farms and the range of environmental impacts that they may have, together with the economical aspects. So it's a pretty big proposal. It's, I suppose, something that, you know, we weren't expecting to come out this soon. Perhaps it'll take a couple of years to go through, I suppose, negotiations and debate and standing it up and everything. But it's firmly on the table at the minute. And another interesting aspect of it is that these permits that farmers will have to apply to, they plan to make them available to the public on the internet free of charge. So it's interesting times ahead on that front.
Absolutely mad stuff there, and particularly with the talk of food security from the European Commission and what they're doing to support farmers on that front, it's surely it couldn't be a runner. What's the minister had to say about it?
Yeah, the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnell, look, he's actually slammed the proposal, and he told the Farmers Journal in this week's newspaper that the proposals do not appear to be based on the reality of Irish livestock farming, which is incredibly sustainable. So that was his take on it.
Very good. Look, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And sticking with Minister McConnell and the Commission, Amy, you report on page 3 that there's yet to be a decision made on the 15.8 million in funding the department has received from Brussels to support farmers mitigate the impact of the war in Ukraine. Do we know yet who it's going to, and will they be topping it up by that 200%?
No, so the 16 million euro, or as you said there, 15.8 million euro coming from the Commission to help Irish farmers basically as a result of the impact of the war in Ukraine here. How that will be spent and what will be spent on is still kind of up in the air. It's not sure, we're not sure if the, or it's not clear if the tillage incentive scheme is going to come out of that fund or if that's coming from National Exchequer funding. I suppose it's kind of yet to be decided. On Taoiseach Micheál Martin, in a statement to the Farmers Journal, he said that no decision has yet been taken on whether that 15.8 million will be co-financed. And what's co-financing? I hear you say co-financing, that means that the government has the ability to match the funding, but in this case it usually has the ability to 100% match certain funding from Europe. In this case it can co-match it by up to 200%, so that means that the total fund for farmers could be to the tune of 48 million euro if the government decides to throw everything into it. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin said that the minister and the rest of government are currently examining ways to best mobilise this support as soon as possible, including that level of national co-funding. And the decision will be announced as soon as it's finalised, he said. And he also added that this government is committed to supporting farm families and their businesses through this challenging period. So it'll be really interesting to see by how much that they do co-finance that fund, Barry.
Definitely. Look, the money's definitely needed anyway. And look, finally, Amy, you've also an update from the department on that 40 million that was left unspent from the BEAM scheme. What's going on there? Is the money spent, or could it be coming to be farmers eventually?
Yeah, there's now currently a good bit of confusion around the BEAM scheme. Originally launched, you know, the Beef Exceptional Aid Measure, it was announced as a 100 million euro scheme. A total of 77 million from the fund was drawn down by farmers, and of this figure, almost 18 million euro is in the process of being clawed back from about 13,000 farmers. So that's by farmers who didn't meet the requirements to reduce nitrogen, basically, which was a requirement of the scheme. So that's leaving around 40 million euro of an underspend there. Now, Ireland received 50 million from the European Commission to fund the scheme, and that then it then matched that fund. And we mentioned co-financing already. It co-financed it by 50 million from the Irish Exchequer when the scheme was announced back in 2019. However, this week, the Department of Agriculture, a spokesperson, has said that there was no underspend in the BEAM scheme. They said that BEAM was a demand-led scheme and that the money allocated to it was determined by the number and type of eligible animals. They said that the 50 million exceptional aid allocated to Ireland from the EU was fully spent, and an additional 27 was provided by the Irish Exchequer to cover the full spend under the scheme. So that 50 and 27 is obviously adding up to 77, but that doesn't take into account the clawback. So at the very least, there should be 80 million there if they weren't co-financing it. But the scheme was sent out there as a 100 million euro scheme. It was 100 million euro targeted to the beef sector at beef farmers, and there appears to be 40 million euro now that's either gone back into national coffers or possibly gone to be spent on other schemes. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out again. I'm sure it's not the end of it.
Thanks, Amy. Sticking with beef now, we're going to head to our beef editor, Adam Woods. Adam, your team has an action-packed beef breeding focus in this week's paper. Lots in there on selecting the right bulls for breeding and herd management. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, I guess one of the headline aspects is those, we'll say, beef breeding tables. A huge amount of interest every year on those, Barry, in terms of farmers looking up and looking to see what the top 25 bulls is in the terminal index, what the top 25 bulls is in the replacement index, and the dairy beef index. And look at figures, you either love them or loathe them, but they really are a tool on farms. And farms like to see, we'll say, what breeds are doing best and what bulls to use. With some really good tips in there on using AI as well. And also on a stock bull, I guess, this year, given the higher cost that farmers are paying for fertilizer and feed, you know, some may not be thinking about changing a stock bull this year. So that means you have to look after your stock bull on the farm. And Cure Media has some really good tips there in vaccinations, keeping a bull in good condition, keeping his feet right, making sure he's fertile going out with the herd, because really an infertile bull can cause huge consequences later on in the year in terms of empty cows.
Plenty of reading in it. And Adam, it also includes detail on a report from ABP and the ICBF, which was launched this week. On page one of the main paper, you report that the science is telling us that slaughtering cattle earlier is the way to go for reducing emissions from the beef herd. Are the likes of ABP and other processors going to step up to the plate here and incentivize farmers to finish early?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Barry. I guess if we take a step back, look at climate change is with us. Maybe in the last couple of months, we've stopped talking about it in terms of a war in Ukraine and increased input prices on farms. But we'd be very foolish to think that climate change is going to go away. 37% of our greenhouse gas emissions in Ireland are from agriculture. We've big targets there to reduce those greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. And earlier slaughter age is one of the things we can really do in terms of reducing an animal's greenhouse gas emissions for the lifetime. ABP and Chagas and ICBF have come together to launch a report. It's called a Beef Benchmark Report. ABP are rolling that out to the 1,300, we'll say, suppliers this week. And that details an individual animal's greenhouse gas emissions for the lifetime, for the carcass weight and for their live weight. Really, really interesting report. And you can actually look at animals and what affects that greenhouse gas emission. Big question was, and I put this to ABP as regards, will they penalise or will they incentivise farmers in the future to produce either low or high GHG emission animals? They seem to think that maybe at the moment they're paying a 20-cent we'll say bonus under their Advantage program. But really going forward, Barry, ABP and beef factories in general, they never incentivize something without de-incentivizing something else. So if there does come in a payment for low GHG animals, then we'll say you'll have a penalty on high GHG animals. That would be very, very unpalatable for a lot of farmers. And I think that would take a lot of discussion before that would happen. What we could see happening and what an option is there under the next round of CAP, and under eco schemes, for example, it makes perfect sense to put earlier slaughter age or low GHG animals as an option under the eco scheme, because if we're reducing our emissions, well, that's ticking a box on the environment. And I think there's real scope there to investigate that as an option under an eco scheme and for a slaughter premium in the future.
Definitely, I'd agree with you there, and it'd be interesting to see what happens with it. Just staying with that report mentioned by Adam from ABP and the ICBF, we hear now from Andrew Cromie and Stephen Connolly about what's in the report and how it was developed.
Okay, I'm here with Andrew Crummy, Technical Director with ICBF. And this week, ICBF have launched a beef benchmark report in conjunction with ABP, the meat processor. The report aims to highlight that the carbon footprint or the greenhouse gas emissions of different individual animals on the farm. It's a first for ICBF. It's a first for Irish farmers to be able to view this data and use this data maybe to better inform them as regards what management decisions they make on the farm. And it's really interesting data as well. Andrew, I suppose to take a little back step, a lot of our listeners maybe would be asking, when you say greenhouse gas emissions or CO2 equivalents, what essentially do you mean when you say greenhouse gas emissions of animals?
So typically, if we think about a typical steer system here in Ireland being slaughtered at sort of 27, 28 months off grass, typically that animal in its lifetime will emit about 5 tonnes of greenhouse gases of CO2 equivalents. And that's measured over its lifetime based on the growth of the animal, and really it's the feed and fertilizer that's required to grow that animal that's emitting, you know, that's the where the majority of the methane is coming from. And by having knowledge of that growth profile of the animal, of the age, the gender, you know, when it was slaughtered, etc., the systems that it was in, we can now calculate it's called a gross emissions, a CO2 equivalent output for each individual animal. So as animals are growing on farms going forward, but also critically then whenever they're slaughtered, we have this new benchmark tool for farmers, and they can look at that figure and they can look at individual animals that they're slaughtering in terms of, and it's the higher growth rate animals that are able to finish at an earlier age are the ones that ultimately are leaving farmers more money and have the lower then gross emissions and the lower carbon footprint, and that's what we're really looking to try and highlight for farmers, so that they can start to see the opportunity that there is between, you know, that strong linkage that there is between profitability and sustainability at a farm level.
So one of the things a farmer can do, I guess, at farm level is, if we slaughter our animals at a younger age, they have less greenhouse gas emissions in their lifetime. And I guess maybe when farmers see this, they think that, well, if you pull me back from an average slaughter age of maybe 27, 28 months for a steer back to 24 months, you're pulling me back into a shed system. Then that's not what this is about, is it, in terms of reducing that slaughter age?
No, definitely not. I mean, what we're very much focused on is trying to look, we have to work within systems. Farmers have well-defined systems on their farms. Their farms are set up, whether a fella's finishing cattle off grass in the third summer, or maybe some fellas are finishing cattle off grass in the second summer, or maybe a fella's finishing cattle out of the house. What we're really trying to do then is highlight and reward those animals that have a better growth rate, that can get away quicker. And, you know, also in doing that, trying to work with farmers or provide them with benchmark tools that they can see as they introduce improvements or tweaks in terms of their management systems on farms, you know, and that could be through better silage or whatever, you know, that they're able to get better growth rates and get those animals away that bit quicker at no extra cost. And that's the key point here. You know, this whole exercise or this whole benchmark report would defeat itself if the outcome was that farmers were simply, introducing more feed and fertilizer to get them away at a younger age at slaughter, and that's certainly not what the objective here is.
I guess this week sees the launch of the ABP Beef Benchmark Report to ABP suppliers. If I'm a supplier of Keepack or Dawn Meats or another factory in Ireland, how do I go about, will I have access to this data in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we're piloting it now with ABP initially, just as we, you know, the first meat processor, but we will be evolving this to other meat processors, to the Keepacks, the Dawns, the Liffeys, the Slaneys or whatever, you know, and that'll be through Meat Industry Ireland. And that's very much part of the overall objective, because some guys will be maybe slaughtering some cattle with ABP and maybe some others with another meat factory. So ultimately, you know, as farmers look at this benchmark data, they want to see it for all of their animals, for all of the animals they're slaughtering in a given year. And we'll certainly working towards that through MIA to have the beef benchmark report available to all suppliers.
There has been a change this year, Andrew, maybe over the last couple of years, in terms of the trends in slaughter age. We've already been making some progress on this trade as regards the national cattle.
And that's why we'd be very confident, Adam, that, you know, we're already in a track here. You know, there's a bit of momentum. If we look over the last 10 years, the prime cattle kill has come back by 45 days. It came back significantly now in the 2021 kill. It came back by about 20 days in 2021. Now, you could argue that maybe 2019 and 2020 were a bit maybe artificially high because of, you know, there was, you know, the challenges at the end of 2019 with blockades, and there was COVID in 2020. So certainly in 2021, we're seeing about 20 days coming off the prime cattle kill. And even if we look at the cattle being slaughtered in 2022, year to date, again, and whether that's a combination of price or feed and fertilizer costs on farms, like certainly age at slaughter is continuing to come down. And look, that's very, very positive. It tells us that, you know, farmers are starting to, and this, there's no change in seasonality here. This is within their system. So again, I go back to the point I made earlier on, you know, that as farmers get more comfortable and confident that they have animals that are able to push on with good growth rates, good weight for ages, that they'll have the confidence then to let these animals off increasingly at a younger age. And look, very confident. Look, there's a 4.5 million to 6.5 million ton target that we have to hit as an industry. And look, the analysis that we would have done with Chagas in this regard would certainly point to a confidence that there's a million ton can be got here through promoting an earlier finishing age. And that's exactly what the Beef Benchmark Report is designed to do. It's designed to have a science-based metric to help to support farmers in that regard. And look, one would hope that in time, the industry will likewise respond in terms of having appropriate incentives or promotion to really encourage that earlier finishing age, which at the end of the day, farmers need, the industry need, broader society needs as well. And farmers and industry, we can certainly, you know, this is a very positive development in that regard.
Thanks, Andrew. Okay, I'm here with Stephen Connolly, Agri Sustainability Manager with ABP, the meat processor. Stephen, you're launching the ABP beef benchmark report in association with IFBBF this week. Tell me, I suppose, a bit of the background to this as regards why ABP as a company, I guess, want to promote this in terms of GHG emissions coming from suppliers' animals.
I suppose, firstly, so the main reason behind it is, look, we want to be shown, I suppose, in a positive light, how carbon efficient our farmers are. It's probably something that is sometimes forgotten about, like we're in the top five. And secondly, then, it's to be able to benchmark their performance. So over on the dairy side, they have the co-op report for many years. So we just want to be able to provide this report to farmers that not only on GHG, but also on, you know, how they perform in regards, you know, carcass weight, conformation, whether the animals are in spec, age, that they can benchmark to, compared to their peers, like, so as to try and, you know, maybe make improvements or optimize their performance. And obviously then that will relate to the greenhouse gas emissions. So
in terms of the, I suppose, what does the future look like for this report in terms of how will ABP use this? Is it for customers? Is it for farmers? How are you going to use this information going into the future?
So I suppose this report is probably important to back to the start. So this report has come out on our trial farm in Carlow. So we ran the report firstly on them animals. And what we found was, like, the genetics has a huge impact on the performance of these animals, not just on greenhouse gases, but also on economics. So we're hoping this report might highlight that, as it has the commercial beef value on it, just to farmers, when you're buying calves or buying cattle, to look at the commercial beef value of these animals or genetics, like. So I suppose that's the first part of it. But also, look, we do want to, it's not just for customers, it's for farmers, that they can basically use it as a tool to maybe optimize what they're doing on their farm, and it's there for their Chagas advisors as well, like, that they can look at tweaking things on the farm. So it's probably the big part of it. Like,
so at the moment, I guess you have foresight as regards what animals, what their GHG emissions are for every single animal that you're slaughtering through the data coming through from ICBF. Could it be a case in the future where you might add bonuses onto low GHG animals or add penalties onto high GHG animals?
It's a very good question, like, so it is, and I suppose there's a national, I suppose, answer to that, like, a lot of work going on and to it. I suppose we are paying a sustainability bonus on the Advantage Beef Programme at the minute. We're paying a 20 cent.
How is that 20 cent built in to?
So it's built in based on, we're looking at certain genetics, so a minimum genetic merit standard for suckler bred or dairy bred animals, and also be involved in environmental schemes, like, so it is. So look, I suppose that is what we have at present. And look, who knows what's going to happen down the line, like, so it is.
I guess the big question is around this, I suppose, is around bulls, and we talk about lower GHG emissions, and they're the animals that we want. And if we look at Chagas research, I think, is it maybe comparing 7 ton with an under 16-month bull versus 14 ton with a steer off grass at the end of the third grazing season. Where do we sit with bull? I guess bulls are an obvious answer here to an earlier slaughter age and a lower carbon footprint and a lower GHG emissions for their lifetime. But yet, I guess, from a processor point of view, you're saying, no, we want to max. I think as part of that Advantage Programme is 10% on bulls. Like, why not look at bulls as a real option here as regards reducing GHG emissions or our national GHG emissions?
I suppose, first of all, we're not going to hide from the science of it. Like, they are, look, the Chagas work has shown they are more carbon efficient, and we know that ourselves. I suppose the issue as a processor is we have to look to what our customers want. And our point of difference is steers and heifers, where they can buy their bulls from continental Europe probably cheaper, whereas our point of difference is steer and heifer. So I suppose it depends on if our retailer maybe changes what they want. Obviously, we'll obviously follow that. We understand the science, it stacks up. But at the minute, that's our driver. Like, we have to give them what they want.
Has that been communicated to consumers, I wonder, and ABP customers, that the carbon footprint of bulls, or we'll say the GHG emissions of bulls, that you're talking 7 ton versus 14 ton for a steer off grass, is that being communicated to consumers and to retailers?
I suppose the honest answer to that is I don't know. That's being honest with you, I don't know that. Like, so maybe it's something that could be communicated with them, but I suppose that's what the current, I suppose, when we bring customers, they like to see the steers, the heifers on grass. You know, it looks, you know, that's the Irish ink, you know, that's what sells, like.
So finally, if I'm an ABP customer and I'm finishing cattle, how do I get access to this data? Or in time, will it go out to all ABP customers? But for example, if I want it next week, is it there available to me?
So currently, it'll be going out to roughly 1,300 farmers. But it will be available to all ABP farmers once they supply a minimum amount of cattle for each, whether it be a steer, heifer, or young bull. And what it'll be available on their ICBF, the ICBF website after each kill. So they'll be able to look at the profiles and compare the different animals, you know, for their GHGs, their carcass weight, the sires. And ICBF are doing some work to be able to use them profiles to, you know, that the farmer can, you know, sort them or filter them, that they can make management decisions, like, because the report is great in the post, but it's in a PDF format, you can't really, you know, manage it or analyse it, like. So in time it will be available to all farmers.
That's Stephen Connolly, Agri Sustainability Manager with ABP, speaking to the Irish Farmers Journal. Thanks very much, Stephen.
Interesting stuff, folks, from ABP and ICBF there. Lots to think about. Changing subject now altogether, and we'll head on to our news correspondent, Noel Barden. Noel, you report on page 4 that the TB compensation paid to beef and dairy farmers in 2021 was up by almost 50%. Lots of data in that piece. Can you give us a bit of a roundup?
Yeah, Barry. So the total amount paid out by the department under the various schemes that come under the TB compensation efforts amounted to 25.5 million in 2021. That's up from a total of 17.3 million the year before. If you look at the on-farm market valuations, which would be, you know, the main chunk of the scheme, 21.4 million went into this. And that was again up from about 14 million in 2020. Cork, Tipperary and Kerry were the main beneficiaries out of the on-farm market valuation scheme, with nearly a quarter of the funds going to Cork alone. These three counties, they did take up a big chunk of the compensation that was available. And in terms of the other schemes available to compensate farmers when reactors go down with TB, the income supplement scheme, the hardship grant and the depopulation grant, they all posted increases on 2020's figures, shows that, you know, the funding was up right across the board. Strangely enough, we haven't had the final figures, but any kind of provisional or provisional figures provided by the department or estimates that are out there do seem to point to a lower number of reactors and a lower number of herds coming down with TB in 2021, which was, you know, the first year in a good while that the increase in trend has been reversed. The final figures haven't been provided, but it is just strange enough that when there is almost a 50% increase in payments for less animals than the year before, there is some digging to be done there into the figures as to how farmers were compensated so much more. Were the animals worth more, or was it different classes of animals that were coming down with TB, or what the story is behind those two trends?
It definitely will be interesting. Look, you'd think TB outbreaks would be going the other way, but not so. And Noah, look, on page 6, you update us on an RDS and Togish Organics webinar that was held this week. You write that there's increasing demand for Irish organic beef in Europe, but we're not meeting it with supply. What had Bord Bia to say on it?
Yeah, so Bord Bia said that there was very strong signals coming from Europe that there was the demand there for organic beef, and that Irish beef would be very, very much desired on the continent, even within organics. Some of the barriers to increasing the supply of organic beef to the market that were covered would have been the loss of value that occurs at the weanland stage in the organic beef sector. So when organic suckler herds sell weanlands at marts and those marts go into conventional herds, any premium that would have been going along with that weanland is then lost once it goes into the conventional system. I suppose organic processors did say that they'd be well able to cope with an increased demand, and that they would be looking at the demand for the organic scheme this year and next year as signaling what kind of numbers would be entering into the system at the slaughter end of the system in, say, 2 years' time. they said that if the target of 7.5% of the utilised agricultural area was hit, they would expect an additional 14,000 animals to be slaughtered through organic systems, up from 11,000 now. So that's a more than doubling of the number of organic cattle finished in the country. And with regards to what kind of incentives there is for taking these animals right through to slaughter, the webinar heard that the current premium for organic beef is about 15% over what the cattle would get if they were killed out on the conventional grid. The head of organics in the European Commission, Elena Panici, she did tell the webinar earlier that up to 50%, that organic premiums could be up to 50% across Europe, and that meat was one of the foodstuffs that had a low market penetration. So it does seem like there is opportunities there. But again, if organic beef is only getting a 15% premium and other foods would be up around the 50% mark, it does raise questions as to why the market isn't passing these food premiums down the line.
Thanks, Noel. I also see that Minister Pippa Hack had extended the deadline for applications for the organic farming scheme until the 22nd of April. Moving to our sheep editor, Darren Carty, next. Darren, you report on page 3 that Cullio has made near 300 euro this week and that the sheep trade is doing well overall. We had the first of our own lambs out in Enniscorthy yesterday. Lots of sheep in offer and strong buying activity from factory agents. Is this down to the Easter lift?
Yeah, definitely, Barry. Look, at, I suppose the factories would be very active in the market in recent weeks. We've seen prices increase probably combined by 30 to 40 cent over the last 10 days, 2 weeks. And that has delivered in the desired effect of attracting higher numbers forward. Last week's kill was almost 59,000 head. I imagine, Barry, that we might hit even 60,000 of a kill this week, which would be very high for the time of year. The good thing, I suppose, is that all of that is happening on the back of strong demand and on the back of factories wanting to maximise throughput and wanting to keep numbers coming. And as you say, the first of the spring lambs for the Easter trade are, say, underpinning or just boosting numbers. But there's also a lot of hoggets in the system and factories are very anxious for Cullio's. Like you mentioned there, up to 300 euros. I'd say Cullio's have probably increased anywhere, the heavy Cullio, anywhere from 20 to 40 euros over the last 2 weeks, where we would have been talking or reporting a few weeks ago, I've sorted in yours maybe 95, 100 kilos, 105 kilos, getting into sort of 170 to 200. They're all easily exceeding 200 euros now. And like in any of the sales in the Easter country, there's probably been more than, say, maybe larger framed yours because of the higher numbers of early lambing systems, and they're generally selling anywhere from 200 to 260. And as you say, a selection of them going up to 290 and even hitting 300 euros on rare occasions. But like a fantastic trade, like 2.5 times the value of what they would be probably 2 years ago, and probably double the value of where they are, say, this time last year. Looking at the hoggets are solid. Factories would have increased prices probably by 20 to 30 cent in recent weeks, but the higher numbers coming out, particularly in the last week, the kilo hoggets was up maybe 6,000-7,000, has allowed them just to steady that trade. Prices anywhere really from 7.25 to 7.50 a kilo, and look, there's a few specialist finishers handling big numbers getting slightly above that. The only, I suppose, downside or the only negative in that hogget trade is a lot of heavy hoggets in the system. And look, that's something that is, it's adding to processing challenges, it's limiting the carcass trade, and it's bringing more sheep meat free onto the market. Some factories have moved to bring back in penalties of 30 cent a kilo on hoggets killing over 25 kilos till they are chilling, have an upper price limit of 160 euros a head. So it's just something farmers need to be mindful of.
Thanks, Darren. We'll go to our news correspondent, Rachel Donovan, next, folks. Rachel caught up with the members of the Women in Agriculture Stakeholders Group, who met with the Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Martin Hayden, this week. The group includes female representatives from all the farm organisations. We hear now from IFA Family Chair Alice Doyle, who pressed the Minister on removing the Level 6 requirement for TAMS for women. Niamh Hendy from the Irish Grain Growers, who discussed farm partnerships and pension entitlements, and Alison Graham from ICOS, who pushed the minister to encourage gender balance and gender diversity on agri-food business boards.
Now, Alice, what did you ask of Minister Hayden today?
My main request of the minister today was to ask him to review the qualification that has been inserted into the TAMS requirement for women. We had asked that women would be given 60% TAMS up to the age of 65. Well, we'd asked for more, but it was given up to 65. But in that, it was included was that they would have to do have a level 6 qualification in order to qualify for the TAMS. And we've asked that that be removed, because that's a serious impediment to people, to women, particularly women over 40, applying for the TAMS 60% grant. Most people over 40, most women over 40 who are working on farm have not done a level 6. They have not done the old green cert. Some of them have third level education. But if you have third level education, you can get some leeway towards getting a level 6, but you're still required to be away from farm quite a bit and still put in further study. That's not viable for most women who are working on farms. They're either working full time on the farm and cannot get away from it with child commitments and whatever else, or many of them are working off farm as well. As trying to work on farm, so they don't have the time to go back and do a level 6. So we've asked the minister to have a serious look at that, taking out that impediment, or at the very least to look at another way of getting recognition for women who have put time on farm, to give them recognition for the time they've put in farming. Now, that's not that easy, but we know it can be done. They can show that they have spent time on farm, and that would be given credit for that in lieu of having to go back and do a level 6.
And Alice, what do you think personally needs to be done for women in agriculture in this country?
I think there's a number of areas we need to look at. We probably will have to look at succession, that it's taken into consideration that a female is equally as well qualified or suitable to take over a farm. And I think that will happen in the future, but will only happen where there's consideration given to succession long before a death takes place in the family. I think in the past it's always been taken into for granted that the eldest son will take over when the father dies, or when the father decides he wants to hand over, the eldest son will take over. But I think we're going to have to look a lot more at where we have a lot more discussion around inheritance in a family before it's decided who gets the farm. Because in many cases, we're finding now that women are showing that they're as interested in farming as the men are. And we're also seeing that a lot of women want to come back and farm, and some of the sons don't want to go back and farm. A big issue in farming at the moment in succession is, does anybody want the farm? So I think we need to open it up and stop thinking that it's only the son wants to come back, that the female can come back. And in many cases, females will come back. Now, they may not want to farm in the same traditional way as the father did it, and this could be a barrier, because in some cases the son might say, oh yeah, okay, I'll take on dairying because you did dairying forever, or I'll take on livestock rearing because livestock rearing was done here on the farm forever. But in the future, I think you may have women coming back who will say, yeah, I'll come back and I will run the farm, but I'll run it differently. And I can give a personal example of that in my own situation, where our daughter would probably be the one who will come back and farm, but she won't come back and farm the way her father did. There's nothing wrong with the way her father did it, but it won't fit into her lifestyle, and it won't fit in to any income bracket for her either. So I think we have to look at all those considerations, that we will have women interested in farming. They will be well educated, because all you have to do is look at the ag colleges at the moment, and we see that there's 50%, over 50% of the students, particularly in UCD, say, for example, doing the BAg, over 50% are female. And they have an interest in farming, but many of those are going to work off-farm part-time and farm part-time. So we would be looking at a new model. We may also have to look at, the whole idea of getting women into partnership, because women will farm in partnership with their father, and they may work off farm partly as well, or they will work in partnership with a husband or a partner or whatever way, because there's going to be different arrangements going forward as to how people are going to farm. It's not going to be the one farmer doing everything anymore on the farm. I think partnerships are becoming a huge part of farming, and will, because you will also have a lot of women, I think, who want to farm, may not be able to own a farm, may not have a farm, may even come from a farm, but they can go into partnership with an existing farmer, which we are seeing happening, particularly in dairying at the moment. If they have a certain amount of finance that can buy them into a partnership, or a skill set that they can bring into a partnership, they can bring that skill set in. The farmer has the farm, he may have the livestock, but he may not have some of the skill set that's required. So you can bring in some of these women who have the skill set, who will now come in as partners But it's a partnership, not necessarily all on a physical partnership in the level that you're all doing the same, you're doing physical work, but you may be bringing something else to the partnership. And I think the way farming is going, that's going the way it's going to have to be in the future.
Niamh, you spoke about pensions today for women. What did you ask of Minister Hayden?
Well, I suppose the big issue is that there's a lot of women working on Irish farms that are invisible. They haven't been in recognised farm partnerships or on herd numbers, but they've worked tirelessly on farms over generations, and now they're reaching pensionable age and they're not entitled to a pension. So I think it's a big issue. It affected me personally. My mum doesn't receive a pension. She worked on the home farm since she married my dad in the late 80s, and when it came to pensionable time for pension, she didn't receive a state pension. She applied through Scope to be recognised as a farm partner with my dad. They had all the evidence to prove they worked as a partnership. They had joint bank accounts, all that, and she was told that she wasn't entitled to a pension because helping out on a farm doesn't give rise to a farm partnership. So I just asked the minister that he would recognise the contribution that women have played on Irish farms over the generations, and that those who now reach their pensionable age and are entirely dependent on their husbands for support, that there be some sort of a scheme implemented whereby retroactively PRSI payments could be made in relation to women who worked on farms over a certain period of time.
So, Alison, what did you ask of Minister Hayden here today?
Yeah, so I asked about the Food Vision 2030 target to encourage gender balance and gender diversity on agri-food business boards and among senior management. This is an ambition that we also have within the cooperative sector. We want to see more gender diversity in our cooperative boards. It's something that we're taking actions internally within ICOS, and we're working with our members to introduce a bit more. It's a real challenge for the industry, I think many people will recognise, but it's something that is really important that we look to address. Our cooperatives are multinational, multi-million, multi-billion euro businesses in certain circumstances, and it's really vital that their boards reflect the stakeholders that they represent, reflect the communities that not only they're that they're farming in, but also that they're selling into, and that we have that mix, that diversity of skills and representation also on a board level. So I think it's a priority for the industry, and we wanted to see how we could match up that ambition for the industry with the targets which were mentioned in the Food Vision strategy, and also work together, because I think that there's a lot that we can do in terms of training and education, not just of women, but also of our existing management, so that they recognise the importance of addressing this. And it goes back to recognising women's work on farm, women's skills, and the fact that they have so much to contribute to the running also of our cooperative businesses and our agri-food businesses on a board level and also in a management level.
Lots of important points made there. And finally, we head to the livestock team's Niamh Gunn, who spoke to the winners of the 2022 Certified Irish Angus School Competition. Cuiva Horgan, Padraig Kinsella, Owen Kelly and Cuiva Crane from Gorey Community School in County Wexford described their win from Crow Park.
So why did you choose to enter this competition?
Well, we chose to enter this competition because we've seen it at the National Ploughing Championships in 2019, and it sparked an interest between us, and then we decided to form a group and put a question towards our principal and teachers, could we enter?
Brilliant. And what has the experience been like so far?
That has been unreal, like, because the fact that we've won it now, it still hasn't really sank in, but like, we've had so many experiences throughout interviews and being able to actually come to places like Crow Park and that sort of jazz, like, it's just been unreal, like.
And what have you learned along the way?
Well, I've just sort of learned like so many different things, like talking to different people and all. I'm not afraid to talk to anyone now. Like learn about talking in interviews for a job or anything like that. It's just been an unbelievable experience altogether, to be honest.
Angus then as well, at the same time, you'd be learning about all that through a project and just more about farming in general.
Like even when we had our own calves, like we learned about Angus's breed and how they were reared, like in comparison to different breeds of cattle.
Yeah, they definitely have, Angus definitely have many desirable traits, so.
And do you understand farming better now?
100%, like it's lovely to see the point of view from everyone else's perspective. Say like I live on a farm myself, but it's nice to see like how ABP and Keepak view things in their position as food processors.
I've usually worked on dairy farms now before, so I wouldn't have had much of an introduction to beef. So this whole competition, being able to see him rear from field to fork, like, was just really informative, like, you know.
It was also a great experience for me, as I don't come from a farming background. So it was great, as I'm kind of like an outsider. So I really enjoyed learning about all the different aspects of farming. And it's even sparked an interest in an agricultural degree of some sort anyway, so hopefully I get the points this year in school.
Yeah, no, what does it feel to be crowned winners today?
It hasn't sunk in yet at all. Like, there's no point, you're probably better off asking us 10 minutes later, because like, we were just there on the pitch and taking photographs, and it's like being a dream, to be honest.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back to school. God, everyone will be absolutely delighted with us.
Because we're the first group from our school to ever even enter the competition, never mind win it. So like, when we come back and explain that we won it, like, just hopefully the crowd will be unreal.
Everyone in school knows us as the cow group anyway, so
here's cow club again.
we never entered this, and we didn't really have a clue on what we were doing, and we sort of been guided along a small bit with the help of two of our teachers, Jar and Paddy. But other than that, we've sort of just done everything ourselves and kept going and going, and we're finally here now, and it's unbelievable. I don't even know what to say about it. Like, it hasn't sank in.
We'd love to maybe encourage transition year students across the country to get involved. Like, we definitely, it was one of the best decisions we ever done in TY, and like many people say, like, oh, it's such a dot year, you do nothing. Like, four of us can prove that it's certainly not a dot year, and you can make something out of it if you want to.
Congratulations to those gory students. Folks, that's all we have time for this week. Remember, you can also tune into our Down to Argy Business podcast, where this week Jack Kennedy, Anne Finnegan and Fiona O'Neill discuss Arrivo's strong financial results for 2021 and its concerns for its costs in 2022. They also look at the concluded trade talks between the UK and Canada and ask what will these mean in the years ahead. More on those stories and everything discussed today in this week's paper. Thanks for listening, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.